Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 565. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamito. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
I have just been busy working away on logos here to hopefully expand the Stunt Granny empire to heights unknown. So that has been kind of fun, and it might be working its way towards doneness soon. We shall see, maybe by tomorrow, if we can get there.
Oh. Ooh, okay. So the pizza drones are coming.
No, have not worked on the pizza drone sketch yet. There have been other things on my mind to try and get accomplished here before I may or may not get a call back to work, pending certain orders recently to open businesses back up. So,
oh yeah, you guys are going back on Friday, or some people are going back.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I haven't gotten a phone call yet, and I wouldn't be surprised if they held off a little bit longer, to be completely honest with you. So I will definitely have plenty of time to imbibe entirely too much professional wrestling in my life, whether it be new and or old. And, you know, another thing that I do enjoy that certainly has some crossover is the UFC. And the WWE decided to cut Mr. Cain Velasquez this week. And that is at least notable news, I would have to say.
That is, it's notable in how not notable Cain Velasquez, even being in WWE, ended up being.
Yeah, he was good for one match, and that was it.
I wouldn't say he was good for that.
Oh, that was on one of the Saudi shows.
That was the Saudi show where everyone got stuck.
Oh yeah,
and the match was 3 minutes with Kane tapping.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's not good news because I guess because it was a Saudi show, I did not watch it, so I cannot personally rate his performance. But, yeah, when your match pretty much universally gets panned, it's not a good thing.
Well, his entire run, essentially, for such as it was universally panned. It's one of those ideas that on paper sounded great. The guy who defeated, the UFC fighter who defeated Brock for the UFC Heavyweight Championship, you know, comes to WWE comes to WWE in storyline terms, help out his friend Rey Mysterio and his family, and get it Brock again. It's good on paper. It sounds like something that would work, but the Cain Velasquez that showed up looked like a middle-aged dad with a shirt off. Had a bum wheel, yeah, and completely lacked any sort of charisma for professional wrestling. Now, he had shown some promise in the lucha style in Mexico in a couple matches that he'd had, but that's not the Cain Velasquez WWE wanted. They wanted a Cain Velasquez to essentially go against Brock and essentially have a fake MMA fight, which was the style that they employed. And unless you're Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe in 2008, doing fake MMA never really looks good. And Cain Velasquez was essentially doomed from the start. And just, you know, doomed from the start, you know. I would assume a project that Paul Heyman would have pushed for, that Vince, you know, would have had to be, you know, Vince would have had to be talked into, and then pretty much immediately regretted the decision to bring him in.
Yeah, because he was hidden after that.
He was absolutely. I mean, I don't know why they thought they had to rush this. I mean, I guess they really wanted a main event for Brock, a celebrity athlete match, because it was also the same show that Tyson Fury versus Braun Strowman. They love the idea of having the dual celebrity athlete matches on the Crown Jewel show for the Saudi royal family, and for all that money that they're making or supposed to be making right. On those shows. But it just didn't work out, and the domino effect that bringing Cain Velasquez in and then insisting on it being a championship match, because before Cain Velasquez shows up, literally that same night is when Kofi went down in under 10 seconds, which pissed off a lot of people. Brock's reign ends up, they do the weird switch from Brock to SmackDown that only lasts about 3 weeks. Brock goes back to Raw with the WWE Championship. So that means they have to send someone over to SmackDown with the Universal Championship. And they had already, done the deal at Hell in a Cell with The Fiend and Seth Rollins, which is, one of the worst matches of all time. I think that's pretty unanimous feelings on that one.
Right.
And the idea was going to be that Bray would go over to SmackDown as The Fiend, and Bray and Seth would never cross paths again. I believe that was the idea. Seth would stay on Raw with the Universal title. They would try to build him back up, even though by that point a heel turn was, essentially inevitable.
And needed.
And then needed, but Seth would have stayed the Universal Champion, and Brock would have been WWE Champion on SmackDown. But for whatever reason, just whatever Brock wanted or what have you, then they had it. Brock goes over, so then they have to do another Seth versus Fiend match at Crown Jewel. A match only markedly better than one of the worst matches of all time. The Fiend ends up winning the Universal Championship, bringing it over SmackDown. They do what they can, but they obviously rush the. We've talked about it 100 times on this show. They rush the Fiend into a title feud, which. It was a damned if they do, damned if they don't decision that, as we've talked about, completely ruined Seth as a babyface.
Yeah.
Then they had to put the title on him, and then move him over to SmackDown. And thankfully, in the early run of his title run, which really there was only an early run of his title run, he had to, he at least had Daniel Bryan as an opponent, and Daniel Bryan is historically Bray Wyatt's best opponent. So that ended up okay. That ended up all right. Although by that point, they'd done the matches with Seth, where the Fiend was portrayed as superhuman, and Seth was able to get a little on him. But by the time they moved the Fiend over to SmackDown and had him have his matches with Daniel Bryan got a lot more offense on the Fiend than Seth Rollins ever got on the Fiend, which once again making Seth Rollins look amazing. And then, there's more, of course.
Yeah,
as we head into the homes, and this is all because this is all like the domino effect of the decision to bring in Cain Velasquez have him face Brock Lesnar in a title match, which was their decision. You know, it never needed to be a title match between Brock and Cain Velasquez. I think that's very apparent.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely had enough name power that it did not need a title involved.
But we're still moving forward with how this decision it continued to affect things all the way to WrestleMania. They had The Fiend as the champion. They needed a big name for him to wrestle in Saudi Arabia. So they brought back Goldberg. And then there was the push, both internally, for many people internally, as well as a large segment of fans who just wanted to see Goldberg win the title and go to WrestleMania to defend against Roman Reigns. And that decision wins out, or that point of view, you know, wins out, and so the Fiend is defeated. The unbeatable Fiend is defeated in under 2 minutes with the jackhammer. When he never should have been in the title picture in the first place. He'd been champion, and then he had to lose. Way earlier than he ever should have. He was both champion and had to lose way earlier than he ever should have. And then after the coronavirus pandemic, the match between Goldberg and Roman Reigns never happens, and now Braun Strowman is the Universal Champion.
I was just kind of letting you go. I'm like, that is quite a string of events that happened. It mainly, like you said, it's mainly because they wanted that to be a title match. Like, it really wasn't Kane. It was indirectly Cain Velasquez's fault, really. Like, unless he some, but I mean, honestly, like, that's one of those things that I'm just surprised that they wanted a title on the line for that type of match. Just because, I mean, I feel like traditionally those matches haven't had, you know, like any kind of celebrity match hasn't really had a title involved. You know, like...
It really didn't. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, Kofi should have stayed WWE champion, you know, for, was you know, primed to continue to be Universal, be WWE champion all the way through WrestleMania. Although they could have done something with it, or they could have done the Seth Kofi switch of some sort, as well with the draft, you know, in play.
That was the other thing that made the beginning of your story weird with Brock jumping all around was the fact that they had all these moving parts right after the draft and everyone was supposed to be staying in place. And then they were playing, you know, main eventer, switcheroo between Raw and SmackDown because of all these shenanigans.
Yeah. It was a crazy, messy time. Pretty much since that then, you know, we've had the last 6-7 months has just been a really messy time for WWE. Even before coronavirus sent them to a empty building in the middle of Florida.
Yeah, and this is one of those things that I am not the biggest, hey, look at the number of viewers guy, but it is kind of strange to me that, obviously television, especially anything that is somewhat live, seems to be drawing a lot more viewers than normal because, well, shockingly, people are at home. So they're watching this type of TV. Because, like, the wife watches soap operas, and the soap operas ratings are up. But somehow the WWE has managed to... Not that they're losing a lot of viewers, but they're still not getting any more from people staying at home.
No, they're not. I mean, no. I mean, ratings are dropping every week. No. It is getting really bad, and a big part of the reason is, I mean, it's twofold. Maybe more than twofold, but let's hit two. Primetime news, cable news coverage, and the fact that it doesn't feel like soap operas are still running through the episodes they filmed before, you know, coronavirus shut them down, I assume.
That is correct.
They're still running normal episodes like any other show on television, until they run out of new episodes, or if they run out of new episodes before they're allowed to continue filming.
Yeah, there's one
which is what primetime television is going to be dealing with very soon. You know, sooner than they hope to, or they're trying to stretch it. Or a lot of shows I think are trying to stretch out the amount of episodes they had in the can by, you know, by essentially airing new episodes every other week to get themselves at least through the middle of May like they were supposed to, or however they're doing it.
Yeah, there's kind of a bunch of different things, because just speaking for the soap operas, since I've definitely watched more of them because I'm home, is that the one is doing a lot of flashbacks because they have a lot of material. The one is taking Fridays off.
Okay.
To extend the material. And yeah, I know what you're talking about with the, I know that there's one show that we're watching. I mean, normally this is when, you know, this is the blow off, week, usually for most TV shows, the beginning of May. Yeah, TV programmers are going to be running out of new programs if filming doesn't start sooner rather than later. Which is, that could get really interesting. It was also not a surprise to me, and I guess this wasn't a piece of news that we had talked about beforehand, but was there something about ESPN possibly getting a contract with the WWE to air some of their material moving forward also?
No, I think that story was actually the frequently mentioned story about how WWE was looking to move their pay-per-views off the network onto either ESPN proper to be aired on cable, or to be rolled on the ESPN Plus like UFC pay-per-views.
I would be so annoyed if it's ESPN Plus.
I will be too. I look at sometimes about, you know, maybe I could get. I don't know if I could ever get $4.99 a month out of a use of ESPN Plus. I just don't feel like they have enough exclusively on there for me, and I'm not even that big of a sports guy either. So it really isn't. It isn't my thing, and especially if you tack on UFC pay-per-views are now exclusively available on ESPN Plus, but you still have to pay $60 for them. What would they charge for WWE? I'm not paying $20 a month for Backlash. on top of a different subscription service than WWE Network.
If it's exclusively over there, I'm gonna have a problem.
Yes.
Well, I mean, that was one of the main reasons. Like, I mean, that was always the logic to me behind getting the network. I'm like, I'm paying, like, because I always got at least the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. And I usually got SummerSlam and Survivor Series. Like, I usually got the big four. And that was way more money than paying for the network for a year. But if I'm going to be, you know, adding extra charges, I'd almost rather pay an extra buck or two a month to keep it on the network rather than having it shipped over to another service that I don't feel like dealing with.
Yeah, I would absolutely. They probably should have. I mean, it's a kind of moot now because they're because no one's going to make that kind of a deal with WWE for these kind of pay-per-views in the for these pay-per-views in the empty arena era. Although maybe they would. I don't. If anything, if they actually in the here and now, if they did anything, depending on how much longer we're going to be without much in the way of. Original programming, particularly live sports. Maybe WWE will be able to sell their pay-per-views to ESPN or Fox, but to be aired on traditional television, not a new streaming service.
Oh, yeah.
I would say that maybe that's possible. I mean, nobody would. I mean, I don't know if anyone would have. Guess that ESPN was going to turn over every Sunday night in March to play old WrestleManias, but th that happened.
Yeah, and I mean, there's going to be a lot of empty arenas, just one way or the other. Like, just because even with the restrictions somewhat being lifted here in Ohio starting the 1st of May, there's still no mass gatherings, which
No.
obviously means wrestling is going to be held in this vacuum for the foreseeable future still. And that's definitely one thing that I've been kind of disappointed by, and I know that Jeremy and I did talk about this part, but and it definitely showed again on Monday where the WWE is still doing kind of the same show they do, even if, the coronavirus hadn't hit. The formatting's the same. They haven't, and I even think you and I talked about this, like, they haven't
Oh,
picked
yeah.
up any of their cues from the Undertaker and AJ Styles match, or even the Firefly Funhouse match, and like they haven't brought any element like that to Raw or SmackDown at least.
Yeah, but you can't go to that well, those wells too many times. Obviously that's what they're trying to sell money in the bank on, another unique location shoot experience. I don't know if it's going to be necessarily as cinematic as those two, but it's definitely it's taking the action to a different location, to doing that type of a thing. So you really probably should save that kind of thing for pay-per-view. Now, as far as doing different things, as far as doing different things, as far as a different format to the shows altogether, absolutely. It seemed like they were trying to experiment a little bit before WrestleMania, but now they've gone completely back to their, to their to the Raw formula that's been in place for seemingly over 20 years. The formula of only important, quote unquote, important things ever happen at the 8, 9, and 10 o'clock hour, and then in the last 15 minutes, everything else is filler. It's just and various other tropes that have developed over time that are, most of which are left over from the Attitude Era. And the ratings keep going down. I mean, if they thought that in the lead up to WrestleMania, playing too many old matches was driving people away, or they thought too many different style promos were driving people away, well, now that they're doing their, matches the same way, formatting the shows the same way, doing their promos the same way. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest at this time, and then ask a stupid question in interviews. obviously, promos, feeling more scripted again after they seemed a little more ad-libbed in the lead-up to WrestleMania. Yeah.
Well, and I guess that's it. I don't expect an AJ Styles versus Undertaker every Raw that I turn into. But, more of that stuff that you're getting to later about just like, and again, I know Jeremy and I went over this, but like the stuff that AEW did this past week with like Darby Allin, like a whole kind of backstage loner, like him on his, he keeps on dragging people around on his four-wheeler and things of that nature. Like, there was that kind of promo, and Sammy Guevara had something like that. And we even talked about, at least on NXT, there was the Chelsea Green and Robert Stone pool scene.
Yeah.
And
the Johnny Gargano, Candice LeRae didn't scene as well.
Yeah, and Raw and SmackDown just, at least that's got to be one of the things that's turning people off. Like, you have a chance, and I mean, this is a chance to kind of throw things at the wall. Like, you do know that, I mean, at some point, and I mean, I guess we go to this every now and again, that at some point, if the ratings keep on going down, when do you go, oh, well, it's the format. I need to change something here.
I don't know. I mean, well, we've been asking ourselves that question for nearly 20 years. in some way or another. And they've made only minor cosmetic changes to how Raw and SmackDown look. I mean, the biggest change has been the one that's been forced upon them in the last 6 weeks, really. as I said, I mean, take advantage of, the area around the performance center. They apparently have carte blanche to wherever the hell they want in Orlando, so you might as well do it. or the area around Full Sail University, which I'm surprised they're allowed to go back to Full Sail and film at the school's, theater. And I guess they have to be cleaning up really well after themselves, because and I guess the school has no intention of letting students back before the fall, so maybe it's not that big of a deal. But still, if you have those locations and maybe other locations in and around the area, utilize those. A lot of the stuff AEW seems to be inserting into Dynamite is things that are just seem to be being filmed at the wrestlers' houses.
Yeah, and I mean, it just it just gives it a different vibe. And I mean, I know that because they're not doing any better than Raw, I don't think, correct? Like, they're still doing a million, maybe, on a good week?
No.
What I thought...
The combined rating for AEW and NXT is circling under a million at this point. Or 1.1, 1.2.
Oh, okay.
AEW's ratings are pretty much half what they were since the debut in October, when they debuted with a 1.5, sometimes even less, and they were trajectorying down even before coronavirus. So, I mean, which is gonna happen? You get people with curiosity, and then you have to essentially, build your real audience from there after a highly publicized,
oh yeah, debut
pilot episodes, essentially.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so no, I mean, you really don't compare. I mean, Raw and SmackDown ratings will have to absolutely, you know, freefall it to a level unthought of for AEW or NXT to be that close.
Yeah.
I mean it's because AEW and NXT's particularly AEW's numbers are falling. The gap is still, you know, what it was before. It's not a greater gap because Raw and SmackDown ratings continue to fall. And as we said, there are things that you can. It's so Raw and SmackDown just feels like filling time, so that they keep getting this TV money. That's what it feels like. I mean, there was at least some semblance of real effort being put in the weeks leading up to WrestleMania, but since then, it just feels like filling time. The way that they've been utilizing Zelina Vega and her crew to just fill time without any real plan to effectively push them by winning matches.
Well, and that's the other thing that it didn't really pop up until I noticed it on Raw this week for sure. The recurring enhancement talent. Like, normally with enhancement talent, it's just like, oh, we're in Pittsburgh. We'll snag someone from the Pittsburgh scene. They get, you know, they lose in 2 minutes, and then we move along. But they can't do that currently.
No, I mean, you think there's enough talent to still sell the performance to at least get people out there to do that. And that is the one thing that I think that WWE has been effective with is trying to bring back the squash match. I do think that's the one thing that they're doing more differently. I do hope that, you know, you can retrain the audience to accept these type of matches that really haven't been seen since the heyday of the Monday Night War, when they were believed it was believed that squash matches led to people turning the channel.
Yeah, sometimes guys just need to have wins.
Yes, like, they do, and they need to have dominant wins.
Yeah, and I've talked a lot about some common ground that I've had with Jeremy this week, or in our conversation currently. But one that did not come up with us, but also involves squash matches, was the Kenny Omega versus what was the gentleman's name? Do you recall?
Something was Andy something or.
Yep, I'm sorry, sir. You are obviously a much better professional wrestler than I am. This guy that sits behind a microphone, so whatever in that department. But I was kind of amused by the kerfuffle about, because I was kind of flipping between shows, and I've had some cable issues, so I don't know what to watch and what not to watch sometimes. And this past week, NXT didn't record, but AEW did. So I ended up watching NXT live and bouncing back to AEW. But the thing that I definitely saw the most about was, yeah, Kenny Omega. And people made it sound like he nearly lost to the gentleman in question. And it was kind of funny because I think I watched it while I was recording with Ken last week. So I didn't pay attention. And so I'm like, you know what? I should go back. Like, everyone's so pissed about this. I should go back and watch it. And I watched it, and I started to wonder why everyone was pissed off. What camp do you fall under? Pissed off or wondering why people are pissed off?
Pissed off. But maybe not as pissed off as some, and certainly not as pissed off as Jeremy. Can't bring himself to be that. That's a level I don't get. That's a level I don't get over many things, let alone professional wrestling. But I didn't like it. I mean, just beat this guy. He is beneath. Kenny Omega has had so many. How do I put this?
Yeah.
Kenny Omega should have been the top guy, at least the top singles babyface in AEW from the start, until they got someone else ready. He really should have been.
Okay.
He should have been he has been essentially too giving. He's with his matches with Pac, going 50, letting him beat him more than once, and the match with Moxley back in November, and essentially letting John Moxley, become the top baby, which is fine, but Omega just does not come off like a really big. I mean, even in his own tag team with his own tag team partner, championship partner, Hangman Page has become a big, arguably a bigger star than him. Now, eventually, that it should have happened, and Hangman has definitely come onto his own. It's unfortunate that he's been off of TV for whatever reasons due to coronavirus over the last few weeks. Bottom line is Kenny Omega is not the star that he was supposed to be from the start of AEW. It's great that other people have gotten a chance to shine, and Moxley's an excellent babyface champion to have. It's great that Hangman has come into his own, but I do feel like Kenny and the Young Bucks have totally essentially before it even started criticism of them making this a vanity promotion for themselves and always putting themselves over everyone, they've been sensitive to that, and to a ridiculous degree, they've lost matches they shouldn't have and featured themselves less than they should have. Cody obviously has no qualms with featuring himself in multiple segments and multiple storylines throughout his own show, and the show has been better off for it.
I mean, he made Sean Spears entertaining for a while.
Yeah. So, so in Kenny's case, he really has not been that guy that he was in New Japan. Just period. I mean, some of that's going to have to do with, he had some of the best wrestlers in the world to wrestle with, and in AEW, he's going to have some less, great. Good talent, but it's Kenny's job to keep himself a top guy, and it's what he did last Wednesday by letting an unsigned local wrestler who came in to be a job guy get so much on him, kick out of a V trigger, and do all and get all that offense. Kenny defined himself down yet again as someone who can't, polish away a local jabron in a quick amount of time. Now, granted, I don't think Kenny's never done traditional American style television before AEW, but someone really should have been it's not Kenny himself. Cody or Dean Malenko or Arn Anderson or whoever, Billy Gunn or whoever's backstage or whatever should be says told him, no, this is your match. This is you need to just beat this guy so that the next time you wrestle someone of real value who is contracted to this company, by the way, you everything they get on you is more impressive. Even if you win in the end. I mean, there was nothing stuff. This guy is just a local talent who lives in the Jacksonville area, I assume. All of Florida is not that separated from each other. WWE could have contacted that guy on Thursday or and had him SmackDown on Friday, and had him lose to The Miz in 30 seconds if they wanted to.
And quite honestly, I'm pretty shocked that that did not happen.
Yeah, I mean, WWE could have literally taken that guy and fed him to one of their wimpier heel wrestlers, essentially. Is the point I'm trying to make, you know?
Someone who falls under the chicken shit heel area of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Someone who's seen as not as good of a wrestler as other persons.
Right. Yeah. So that's what kind of bothered me about it. You know, there's ways to let you know job guys get a little bit of offense, but they shouldn't be kicking out of anything. They shouldn't be hitting you with their quote unquote big moves unless you plan on signing them. Which maybe they might, but right now, I would also assume that they're in something of a hiring freeze. So, and it's not like I was also blown away by what the guy did in the ring with Kenny. It was a squash match that was way too competitive and went way too long. with a guy who I don't even know if they had an intention of signing. You know, what's his name? Andy, I think, or whatever.
Right. Neither of us still looked it up.
Nothing he did was all that impressive to me either. It was just a bad call from a guy, Kenny, who, you know, a top guy who's just being too unselfish, really.
Well, I guess that was one of those things that to me, and it's probably not good because A, they definitely had a squash match later in the show. Like, Wardlow squashed whoever that was. Another guy that I do not remember his name. The match might have lasted longer than a traditional squash match, but it still was pretty quick because he just kind of took his time beating the guy up. So, I mean, but it was, I guess, and maybe this to me is more of a problem for Kenny Omega's character, especially, like, you definitely were viewing it in a larger context than I was, and because I was just focusing on the match itself, and Kenny Omega, for whatever reason, and I guess, again, this kind of goes back to his character, like, he was kind of acting like an ass, you know, like, he was acting like a traditional heel would during a squash match, where he was giving the guy openings by, you know, kind of playing up to the non-crowd too much. You know, which, again, like, you kind of listed a bunch of unflattering things about him already, which, all of them are true. Like, he really, yeah, both him and the Bucks, for whatever reason, they haven't wanted to put themselves over, even though people, that's why they tune into the show. I mean, that's why people came into this whole thing. Like, the Young Bucks weren't the WWE. Like, I mean,
when the Young Bucks in week two, was it, or three, they did that. They did the job to Private Party. That meant nothing for Private Party because, you know, we were in week two. We were in week two or three. You know, The people who followed, watched New Japan, watched ROH, watched Being the Elite, were incredibly familiar with the Young Bucks, but they lost a match to a to a completely unheralded team so early in Dynamite's run that they immediately established themselves as not that special. And then because AEW wasn't going to be pushing Private Party to the moon after that loss, the Private Party wasn't in the immediate plans. The whole thing just became a pointless exercise.
That was probably the worst. That was probably the worst part. Like, I'm like, oh, like, because when that loss first happened, I'm like, you know, if they go back and they go on a tear and, you know, that was kind of their wake-up call that this isn't going to be easy just because it's their promotion. But they ended up, did they lose to the Lucha Bros too? Then afterwards, the Young Bucks?
I don't think they lost. They lost to Santana and Ortiz after that.
Okay. Yeah, so it's just like, if they had gotten some traction and started to move in a, we're going towards the titles now, like, it's our mission, it would have made sense. And I was going to say, because Nick's injury is more recent than that time frame, if I'm not mistaken. Just because it's...
Yeah.
It's still not that all that long of a timeline. I can actually keep track of it. So, yeah, like, there was nothing holding them back from getting back into it. And that second loss to, you know, whichever those teams it was, you know, it didn't make any sense because, yeah, like Santana and Ortiz haven't been in the championship picture. No one really has been because of the situation at hand, which I guess is a little bit of a problem too. But I mean, that's more of a present problem than a past problem that the Young Bucks and again, Kenny Omega created by not pushing themselves. Like, I know that, you know, I mean, the only defense of Cody Rhodes that you say is that he hasn't put himself, he put himself in one championship match, but lost it to, go into a feud with MJF.
Yeah, no, and most of everything they've done with Cody has been great because it was well done, you know, and not a detriment to the show. I mean, there's a way for, I mean, AEW has besides the elite guys, only Jericho and Moxley have had any real credibility before this. Maybe arguably on a lesser level, you know, Daniels and Kazarian, you know, in
no.
TNA
yeah.
And in ROH, but, you know, on a more major scale, you know, the elite, and I can't believe, you know, from where we were a year ago, thinking about what AEW was going to be, I did not think we were going to be talking about the elite not pushing themselves enough. It would either be, you know, too much, which, or, you know, just right. And, you know, Cody proves that there's a way to do it just right. And, you know, once again, as, you know, Kenny continuing to define himself down, you know, shows a lack of understanding on his part of, you know, I guess he spent so much time in Japan that he maybe doesn't understand what you should do to present yourself to a weekly American television audience.
Well, and I guess it's...
Maybe he shouldn't even be in a squash match then. There was no reason for him to even be on that show then.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing that's still... It's just a little bit of a sore spot for me. Like, I understand that people are going to have singles matches. Like, even tag team wrestlers have singles matches. But the amount of singles matches that Adam Page and or Kenny Omega have had is not good. You know, like, it's the ratio is way too high for tag matches to singles matches. And, yeah, I mean, that's just another thing that's just, yeah, I guess I haven't liked that aspect of things from the tag team division in general. Like, where, like, you mentioned Private Party, like, I don't even know where they went. Like, do you know if they get on Dark or anything like that?
Since they did their last set of tapings that, you know, got them, you know, so far, they only, I believe this last set of tapings, they only used talent who lived in the Southeast and could drive in. They didn't fly anyone in from the Northeast or from, you know, out West.
Yeah, okay.
They weren't on the last, any of the last set of tapings that were still in before they start filming again. But even before that, they barely ever got on Dynamite. They were on Dark more week than Dark more week than that, I believe.
Yeah, and I mean that. I guess that is the other part about that. In going back to the Young Bucks, like, if you lose to someone like that, that team really needs to be pushed into a prominent position. But you could really tell by the way that the tournament was made up that they weren't going to make it to the finals almost from the start.
Right.
You know, if the Young Bucks weren't going to win it, I forget who I thought might win it, but, and I did not end up being surprised that SCU won it. Yeah. Wow, their tag divisions had more problems than I thought.
Yeah, and unfortunately, before Corvus hit, they were in a good groove with Omega and Hangman as tag team champions who weren't entirely getting along, but were still coming together to win. That was going well. I mean, I feel bad for AEW. I feel like that, you know, they had some sort of strong momentum after they didn't finish 2018 strong with that episode where they had the Dark Order reign supreme in the final segment of the show. That, you know, they absolutely, you know, did an about face and you know, fixed what was wrong with the show and had been going on a really strong run. They were building to their version of War Games with the Elite and the Inner Circle, and I think a lot of things were going to happen. I think that whatever was going to happen within the Elite, as far as who was going to turn heel and leave the Elite, it was going to happen in that match. So, like, everything AEW was building to just got blown up due to coronavirus. So, in that respect, I absolutely feel horrible for them.
Everyone's definitely been thrown a big old honking curveball for this year, but yeah, the timing for AEW couldn't have been worse. You know, I guess I always felt like the more established stuff had an easier chance. And I'm not saying that they're not going to stick around, because I would imagine that TNT is still somewhat happy with their numbers.
I assume TNT is still happy that they're able to continue to put on new shows every week. I mean, the executive order in Florida has allowed them is not only benefit WWE but also AEW that they can go back to the building the Khan family owns in Jacksonville and continue filming the way that they have, but the curveball has definitely thrown them. You know, number one, you know, whatever they had planned, they still plan to go through with Double or Nothing as a $50 pay per view Memorial Weekend.
Oh,
they've done that. Which, sounds like news to you.
It's not news to me. It's more of an amusing reminder that they still plan on doing that.
Yeah, and you know, because they did the last set of tapings the way that they did and left so many people, literally left so many people at home, they've got nothing really in set up. Maybe in their next set of tapings, they're really going to have to, get some things moving and bring everyone in for it.
Oh.
I mean, before the world stopped, it looked like they were getting ready to, after his win over Cody, push MJF as the next big, you know, title challenger for Jon Moxley. If that still is the plan, they're going to have to get moving on that. If they maybe plan on actually doing their blood and guts War Games type match with the Elite and the Inner Circle, possibly also involving Matt Hardy, you know, maybe they do that as well. But they're going to have to start getting moving on a lot of things too.
Yeah.
Because a $50 pay-per-view in this economy, in an empty arena environment, does not sound all that interesting to me.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Even in a different economy, pre-coronavirus, I was not terribly interested in $50 pay-per-views. Like, I guess that's something to me that's still there's almost a little bit of offensiveness to that price. It's just like, hold on, we know that everyone can get this. The price should, at a minimum, be cheaper than a traditional pay-per-view. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's one thing that really does bug me about that fit. If it was $20, you know, you'd probably have me. Which is still, more than I would spend on an independent show or anything like that. But $50, even when things were going good, I'm like, nah, I don't really want to. And plus, did they do their shows Saturday nights?
Yes, they did.
I will admit that, Saturday night is usually the night that yours truly is out and about doing something that does not involve watching TV. Now, obviously, I can't do that currently, but, Saturday's a bad night for me. Just because there's any number of things usually involving sports teams. that I'd normally attend. So $50, that's just too much. The rent is too high, sir. That's where I'm staying. to ask me to do that after this, his all hit, that is a real ask. But, like I said, $20-$25, you might be able to talk to me about it. Especially, and that's a really short time frame to work up to that. Because, recorded through? Do they have this week's, is this week's show?
Early May, the last word is that they'll start doing TV again the first week of May, or maybe the second week of May, something like that.
Okay.
Maybe by the show a week from tomorrow, they'll tape again, and then still the intent is to do Double or Nothing live and then tape some more, because apparently Double or Nothing live matters.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, whatever. As long as it's good and I haven't seen it and spoilers don't come in front of my face, not through my choosing, don't care if it's live or taped. Like, if it's new, it's new.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. I don't get it. I don't get the need to, for either WWE or AEW to do anything live in this environment. So yeah, but no. We'll see what AEW is. Well, go ahead.
And I guess that was one of those things that since we've done a lot of you were talking about the tapings. I believe you and I talked about those for the WWE last week about them doing them weekly. But then it was announced shortly after I posted the show that I believe that the WWE's taping bi-weekly now to try and cut down on contamination.
Yeah. I believe it will be bi-weekly now. Yeah. Which it is better than, obviously, going live every week or semi-live every week. Yeah, so it cuts down on travel, cuts down on contamination, and gives them more time between, you know, tapings to disinfect and sanitize the ringside area, which is completely understandable. But you know, it's certainly not as, you know, healthy for the talent as just closing down completely, and it's not as good as also once monthly tapings either, but I can understand WWE's decision to compromise with every other week because they have so much TV to tape. Three weekly shows all at 2 to 3 hours in length, plus the B and C shows on the network, and for some reason they're still doing main event for reasons I'm still not sure of, or because it's international television, but you know, they still tape two matches a week for a main event, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, it's extra production.
I understand that they have way more television than AEW to film and edit, and of course with WWE, the way WWE is, they are perfectionists with these sort of things, so they take more time to film each individual episode. So you know. Bottom line, I'm more understanding of that. It doesn't give the talent two full weeks to quarantine themselves after they get back home. So that part does suck, but at least for WWE, once again, the excuse of having so much television to film, and that so much of the talent, I mean, as we've talked about before, does live in Central Florida, so it makes it a little more understandable.
Right.
But, I mean, the whole thing is the whole thing is shitty, obviously.
Yeah. What are you gonna do, man? What are you gonna do? These kids, they're crazy these days. Well, is there anything else major to get to in the wrestling news department? I feel like we've done a good job, unless you really want to bore down on what actually happened in wrestling this week, which we didn't cover particularly well.
No, I am perfectly okay with that, actually going detailing WWE TV this week or anyone's TV this week. So yeah, no, I'm good to go.
Beer, Beltane beer of the show, Land Grant Brewing Quadrahopic Series IPA. This is version 201. I believe they're just going to be. They started 101 last year and went up to 105 or something of that nature. I believe they're just starting each new year with the new 100 and then going from there. This is the first version for this year, and I picked it up when I did a little drive through beer pickup down at Land Grant. And it has Chinook, Azeka, Simcoe, and Cascade hops in it. I like quite a bit the Chinook, the Simcoe, and the Cascade. I believe there's some Azeka hops and a couple of different beers that I like. So, yeah, this one has a nice blend of hops to it, and it's probably a better description than I gave it when I talked about it the last time. So, yeah, if you get a chance, Land Grant, I believe they're delivering all over the state now. If you happen to live in Ohio, go for it. Some good hops. And plus, I believe they came out with version 202 already. So be on the lookout for that one if you would like to do that. I'm at Frango11. That's at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.
Later.